Welcome to The Independent Review, a weekly podcast where we bring you the latest from the world of independent journalism.
Thanks for tuning into The Independent Review. Today, we will start the show off by looking at a clip from an interview done by Taylor Hudick with Catherine Austin Fitz.
I think it's important to end here with ways in which people can ensure a better future for themselves, for their children and grandchildren. And I think that Germany is in at an advantage here because, as you know, of course, there are many small community banks in Germany. Not all countries are structured in this way, but Germany is. But what are the ways in which people can fight back and ensure that they maintain national and individual sovereignty?
If you go check out this article, I want to stop CBDCs, what can I do? I would strongly recommend it. And there's many ideas listed. And the most important thing is you have to do, each person is unique. What you need to do is get yourself and your family out of the control grid. You know, until the last part of the corral snaps into place, get out of the paddock. So first use cash. Bank local, you know, let's take this system analog as much as possible, get it rebalanced, digital and analog, but also support our local banks because the local banks are a bulwark against consolidation, you know, and the kind of consolidation they need to do as CBDC. In many jurisdictions, it makes sense for the local government. So in the United States, it makes sense to have sovereign banks. It makes sense to balance your assets so you're not all in the financial system. You have real assets, you have your own business, you have precious metals. There are many different things you can do. But the other thing is you want to bring awareness. So taking your interview and spreading it out to your family and friends so that they just don't go with the flow and realize, you know, oh, this is convenient. No, it's not convenient because it's leading you into a trap that you don't want to go to. So spread the word because the more people who take it the other way are very helpful. Finally, you want to be as resilient as possible. Given how the world is changing and the economics are changing, it makes much more sense for a community to get together and do their own energy, for a community to get together and, you know, nurture and grow their fresh food systems. Get as resilient as you can with your family, your friends, your community, your neighbors. Do it in a way, though, that's energizing for you. What you want to do is you want to stop financing your enemy and start financing the basic provisions you need. We're just about to publish, you haven't seen it yet, we'll publish next week our new theme for the annual wrap-up called Pharma Food. It's about synthetic food, and it's by a wonderful reporter here in the Netherlands, Elsa van Hamelen, and it's one of the most frightening things I've ever read. And if you haven't started to, you know, I tell everybody, finance your local farmer, not because you want to make money, but because you don't want to eat insects. Right. So, you know, if we want to have a human civilization and a world with fresh food, healthy food, you know, good, clean energy, we're going to have to finance it and build it ourselves. You know, and the other thing I would say, not only does Germany have a great local banking system, Germany has so many great engineers. You have so much engineering talent in Germany. So between the, and some great farmers. So between the great farmland and the farmers, the great engineers and the great bankers, it's time to go off and say, you know something? We're on our own and, you know, we need to rebuild everything, including a healthcare system that's safe and we can use. I can't speak to Germany, but I know in the United States, what's, you know, the hospitals have become literally very dangerous places to go in many cases. So if we want healthcare, if we want education, if we want energy, if we want food, we're going to have to start building it and financing it ourselves.
Our next clip is with Scott Armstrong from Rebunked News and James Corbett from The Corbett Report. Let's take a look.
You know, winding down here, I wanted to, you know, you were so prescient and so far ahead of the curve when it came to COVID. And I know you've been reporting on some of the more current things that we're seeing on the horizon. But if you were to look into your crystal ball here, what would you say we're looking at here in 2023? Just kind of just, you know, just softballs out there. Like, what are you thinking we're going to be looking at here?
Well, let me add the usual caveat, because although, of course, I did talk about medical martial law and things like that in the lead up to COVID, it's not like in 2019 I was saying they're going to do this next year. I mean, so whatever curveball happens will undoubtedly be another curveball that no one was specifically expecting. But the general trends and the things that we know are coming at in some way, and what, you know, how it will be unveiled, who knows? But I chose as my story of the year for, or the trend of the year for 2023 that I predicted in New World next year, was digital ID. Because I think this is the linchpin of so many of these different agendas that are coming together right now. The vaccine passports and the social credit and CBDCs, all of these things hinge on a centralized identification system that will be digitized, obviously, and it will be controlled by the government or governmental connected agencies. And that's, so I think really that's the sort of fundamental infrastructure that needs to be laid in order for all of these other things to be built on top of it. So I'm thinking digital ID rollout is sort of the first step, or the near term of this. And then we'll start to see the social credit, the carbon credits, the vaccine passports, the CBDCs, all of these other things being built on top of that. They're all happening, and they're all happening simultaneously, but I think digital ID is kind of the core of that. And that's why I think that's something we should be particularly concerned about and particularly putting our foot down about. The broader trends that I see is the monetary changeover that's happening in the coming years. There is a huge, almost unthinkable monetary change that is happening, that will involve central bank digital currencies at some level. It will involve likely a changeover in world reserve paradigm, or at least it's sort of a new system developing out of the old Bretton Woods/petrodollar system. There's going to be something else that will happen. So that's definitely part of what's happening. And unfortunately, along with monetary changeovers is usually war. So I do think we are heading towards hot war of some sort. And who knows, you know, Ukraine, Taiwan, you know, pick your place, pick your time, maybe a combination. But at any rate, I do think hot war will be part of this changeover that we're seeing right now, leading us towards the 2030 plus agenda.
Oh yeah. Which is just so demoralizing. It's like, you know, it's very, very, very scary to think that that's what's on the horizon, but you know, I don't blame you. I mean, I feel like it's the same way. Like it's just, it's coming faster than we can do anything about it. So more important than ever to, you know, continue to reinforce our communities and just build, you know, cause hey, if something like that were to happen, you know, and the resources are being pulled and there's like energy shortages, whatever, you know, whether it's contrived or, you know, real, you know, that's where we can rely on each other to get through these times. You know, we've seen it in the past, you know, that's how they, the Freedom Gardens back in World War II, you know, all that stuff. We need to start doing our own little Freedom Gardens right now, folks. But speaking of contrived, maybe this will be the last point we cover here, and then I'll let you let the folks know where they can find and support you. But what do you think about just real quick about the contrived, or I should say, do you think it's contrived, this whole like push towards truth, like on Twitter, Elon Musk, like, you know, like, is this like, is the world waking up? Are we overpowering them with truth, or is this all part of the narrative as well?
I'm not going to completely poo-poo and dismiss everything. There is information that is coming out about the inner operations of Twitter and what have you, but it isn't the full story and it isn't the full picture, and we don't know everything. And this is only one of the platforms. To the extent that it gets people to realize and understand how tightly controlled these platforms are behind the scenes, and that there is no transparency, and that they cannot trust these platforms and should not trust anyone, including Elon Musk, to be in charge of a platform like this and to do it the fair way and all of this, that's to the good. To the extent that it makes people think that, oh, you know, okay, Elon's space guy is the good guy now, and we're going to take his Neuralink because he seems like the good billionaire. That's to the bad. So I have nothing but sympathy for the people who are waking up in 2021, 22, 23, who are coming in at the deep end of this, because in a sense, it was easier to do it back a couple decades ago where the stakes seemed lower. Actually, they seemed pretty high at the time, but in retrospect, we weren't as far along in the agenda. So it seemed like there was more time to sort of get your bearings. Now it's kind of sink or swim. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, are going to sink because they don't have the scaffolding of understanding to realize what's really taking place in the bigger picture. But Yeah, I mean, there's good things that can come out of something like a Twitter files or this thing that's happening, but only if you have the understanding to really perceive what is really happening here.
Now, I would like to move on to what is going on with the WHO currently and why it is important to cover. Our first clip is with Whitney Webb and Johnny Vedmore. We will then transition to another clip with Scott Armstrong talking with James Roguski about the same situation at hand.
One of the most talked about, perhaps, amendments is a change to the following line. So the line originally read, "The implementation of these regulations shall be with full respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of persons." That whole last line about dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of person is gone now. It's been replaced. So it now reads, "The implementation of these regulations shall be based on the principles of equity, inclusivity, coherence, and in accordance with their common but differentiated responsibilities of the state's parties, taking into consideration their social and economic development." So dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms go out the window when it comes to the implementation of these regulations, yeah? So Chief Scientist Jeremy Farrar can be like, well, I think these things have to happen in order to respond to Public Health Emergency X, and those responses do not have to respect human rights or fundamental freedoms or dignity of people. Instead, it's about equity, i.e. treating all people the same. So everyone's got to get the vaccine, right? So that's basically what the equity and inclusivity part means. Coherence just means that they're clearly communicating what you're being forced to do. And then, of course, the differentiated responsibilities. There'll be different standards for developing and developed countries for certain things, probably to do with financing.
Anything that gets implemented has to have a function that everybody gets on board, so they scare people with another virus. I think this is an example of their hubris. They believe that they've now found a way to convince everybody that they're going to die if they don't get pumped full of their medical products. But they've used up all of their chips. Pandemics are so rare and epidemics are so rare, and they try and push these things on you so rarely because they can't do it very easily. People don't just instantly go, oh, I've just left that pandemic, I'm going to trust you now, you just cheated me obviously out of that in that last one. They're not going to do that. They are going to say no, and there's going to be resistance. So they have to do it by implementing policies that dictate to the people what they have to have inside them.
And everyone's like, oh, Jim, what do you think is going to happen in the new year? Right. And I'm like, do I look like Nostradamus? I mean, I don't deal with speculation or predictions, but I played along. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure that from January 9th to the 13th, the International Health Regulations Review Committee is going to be having secret meetings. And on the 15th, they're going to submit a document to the WHO, which are all of these proposed amendments to the international health regulations. And that's so that they can be submitted 4 months in advance of what's going to happen in May from the 21st to the 30th, which is the World Health Assembly, where the 194 nations send all their delegates and everybody else goes and has a great old time in Geneva to decide our future and the fate of the world. And I'm not prognosticating, I'm just reading their goddamn calendar.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what they are saying they are doing. And so the document is available on my Substack. They published a snippet teaser of it on Black Friday between Thanksgiving and the weekend, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't go shopping. I didn't watch any ball games. I was digging into their information. They published their 197 page document, which are all of the proposed amendments from 15 nations around the world. Something happened to Japan's submission. It has disappeared. I don't know what happened to it. And many of those submissions were on behalf of groups of nations. Another question for the audience, does anybody know where Eswatini, it's in the same location on the globe or on the flat earth? Eswatini is a small nation, used to be Swaziland, Southeast Africa. They submitted on behalf of the African nations. The Czech Republic did so on behalf of the European Union. Uruguay on behalf of South American countries and Russia on behalf of a number of countries in their economic federation. So a lot of nations, you know, are weighing in on this. And somebody was trying to call me. Don't call me now, folks. Could have been this or could have been something else. I get a lot of phone calls. But the issue is, back in May, I had a lot to say about what the Biden administration had tried to do in secret, expose the information that they had presented amendments to these same international health regulations on January 18th, which is just under the wire of the 4 months before, you know, the May assembly. And they, at the assembly, kicked Biden's amendments to the curb. They did not even consider or vote on them. And what they did adopt was a protocol. They created a working group. This is the WHO did, a working group to consider amendments to the international health regulations. And they told all of the nations, if you would like to make changes to the rules, submit them by September 30th. And so, knowing that that had happened, I was, you know, doing many things all summer long, knowing that that was on their docket. And so in October, I filed a couple of FOIA requests. Hey, people, you can do it. You don't need to have lawyers and stuff. Just go on government website and search for FOIA and ask them for whatever information you want. They won't give it to you, but you can ask and we'll see what happens from there. I got people from Canada, two people from the United Kingdom, Finland, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. And we all submitted requests. Can we see what was submitted? And the across the board, for the most part, just completely ignored the request. Delay, delay, delay. The United Kingdom actually put in writing to the two people who submitted requests there, yeah, we have the documents, but we're not going to give them to you. And you go, okay, you know, that was totally expected, but you still got to try, okay? And so lo and behold, what actually happened was the Director General, Tedros Ghebreyesus, created another group, which is the International Health Regulations Review Committee, IHRRC, which is not the same as the WGIHR, the Working Group to Study the International Health Regulations. So you have these two groups. One was kind of sort of democratically decided that they wanted to discuss this through the working group. And that got hijacked on October 1st when Tedros Ghebreyesus, the director general, handpicked 18 people, swore them to secrecy, and they got a hold of the submissions from the working group, and they started distilling it and compiling it into, instead of 197 pages, a 46-page document. And, you know, we requested it, we requested it. The working group had their first meeting in the middle of November, while the review committee was meeting in secret for weeks at a time and a couple of days on, you know, here and there. They've met, I think this is going to be their sixth meeting. And where's the information? Well, finally, a little bit before Christmas, they finally got around to publishing all this information. And so I published that on December 16th, and it's an abomination. It's just, don't take my word for it. You can go to a number of my sites. The source materials are there. You said something about, you know, source documents. All I'm doing is trying to shed light on the changes that they want to make to the international health regulations. Now, I'll hit to the end before I start at the beginning, because they're amending an existing agreement that goes back like forever. All right. The rules that are agreed upon as to how that document is to be amended are very simple. You have to submit it 4 months in advance of the assembly. If the assembly considers it, if a simple majority says yes, we'll adopt it. There's 194 nations, half that's 97. So if 98 countries say yes, it's law. There's no need for a presidential signature. There's no need for the advice and consent of Congress. Now, there probably should be, and I would argue that that's what should be, but that's not what they're going to do, right? And so they would love for this information to be hidden, to come up for a vote. And they don't normally like to actually vote the way you think voting is done. They like to reach consensus, which means they wheel and deal all the way on to the assembly. They get everybody on board, however they may manage to do that. I'll let you get your imaginations going. And then what they do is they say, well, we're considering, you know, document X. And so document X is up for consideration. Are there any objections? Oh, we don't have any objections. It's been adopted. Now, if you're a casual observer, you're like, what just happened? Okay. Well, I mean, how many people are casual observers at the World Health Assembly? Okay. And so they would love for this to just remain silent, quiet, right? I doubt that you're going to hear about this on the mainstream. We're just starting to get it into the alternative stream. Thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you want to oppose what they're doing, shine light on that which they're trying to keep hidden. And so the details of it, I'll try to run through the fundamentals. When I read the international health regulations for the very first time earlier, well, in 2022, I got to Article 3, and it currently says that the international health regulations must be implemented with full respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of people. I'm like, okay, so far, right?
Sounds good.
Well, when I read the amendments to that, and that's in Article 3, which is their principles. That's the core principle, number one principle for the whole, everything that follows. When I read the amended version or the proposed amendments, that was just crossed out. Okay. And they want to replace that with equity and inclusivity and differentiated but common capabilities and so forth. And you just go, they want to cross out respect for dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms. Okay. Well, I skipped down a little bit because there was something very concerning in Article 1. They wanted to change the definition of a recommendation by, they have standing and temporary recommendations, because the WHO is an advisory body to all of the nations. They're not a command and control center. That's what they're trying to do. And they crossed out non-binding. So it's a little redundant, and I'm curious why they even ever had it there in the first place, because a recommendation is non-binding. So their definition of a standing recommendation is a non-binding recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, they wiped out non-binding, and the gist of it is they are tired of using propaganda and the media and hypnosis and repetition to get people to think that we're obligated to follow their recommendations, because we're not.
Mm-hmm.
But they want us to be legally, I mean, their words, they want a legally binding document. And essentially, they want it to be so that their, what was recommendations, are orders. And the list of things that they would have happen, number one, probably top on the hit parade for most people, is they want to have a global digital health certificate. And that's not just a piece of paper, okay? It's could be on your phone, could be a QR code. They literally say QR code in the recommendations or the proposal. It's also a testing certificate, a vaccine certificate, a prophylaxis or prevention certificate, a recovery certificate, a passenger locator form if you're traveling, so that they could track and trace you and all that kind of stuff. And you have to realize that is an absolute, complete and total violation of your right to privacy, supposedly protected by the Fourth Amendment. they want access to everybody's medical data. And so, oh, well, what is it that is going to make that QR code actually work, right? Do I have to, you know, follow their prophylaxis, their prevention? You know, what would somebody, a bureaucrat in some nation somewhere say, well, you've got to have this and you've got to have this and you've got to have this and you've got to have this. Otherwise, you don't get to do the things that you want to do in your life. So that was made very obvious. The cat got out of the bag back in, I think, September at the G20. And a lot of people maybe saw that. The Indonesian health minister said, they were very proud. The Indonesian delegation submitted proposed amendments to institute that very type of certificate. And he said that he wanted to have it occur this May at the World Health Assembly. And that was either him speaking out of turn, saying the quiet part out loud, or part of a very sophisticated, you know, messing with your minds, because the WHO has been saying in every single one of their documents that they don't plan to implement any of this until 2024.
Hmm.
And so I don't really care if they're shooting for 2024 or they're trying to sneak it in now. My answer is no, you're not. Never. No. The answer is no. Okay. And so what is going on right now is they're trying to get this document done and submitted, and they could go against what they've been saying and consider it and vote on it in May. Now, they say they're not gonna, and you know, they're waiting for 2024, but the whole point of it is anyone who looks at what they're proposing in terms of things like Bangladesh submitted a new Article 13A that, I really never talk about communism, because I think actually what we're dealing with is fascism.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to be able to give the authority to the director general to declare, you know, an emergency just because he wants to, and then have an allocation plan, which would essentially give him control over the means of production, which is like classic Marxism, that he could say to country A, your manufacturing base has to gear up and make whatever he says, mm-hmm. some kind of pandemic response product.
Operation Warp Speed, baby.
And give it to country B because they need it. All right. And so they want to put him in as, you know, the master sergeant in control of, you know, the supply chain. And that, you know, I'm just touching on a couple of things. Article 2, they want to give him the authority to declare an emergency, not when there's an emergency, but these are their words, if something has the potential to be an emergency. Well,
wow.
What would that exclude?
They can pigeonhole their way into anything. I mean, we have seen over the course of the last couple of years, they figured out, it's almost like they realized, they discovered this life hack or this hack where it's like, hey, if I can extract so much power and resources from a state of emergency, then hey, how about we create these emergencies so that we can make these state of emergency declarations? Whoa. And then we've seen the last couple of years. Oh yeah, state of emergency. Oh, there's a guy. He stubbed his toe over in like Brooklyn. State of emergency, everybody. And now you're saying potential states of emergency. Oh my God.
And, you know, they also have an intermediate health alert.
Mm, okay.
Okay. You know, reminiscent of the red, orange, yellow, okay. You know, color coding. Okay. Be afraid, be very afraid, be afraid all of the time. And I'm going to go into something that is near and dear to my heart. Just the definition of the words unalienable right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unalienable means it cannot be taken away. Period. Okay. Let me give you an example. I hope it resonates with some people, right? Oh, there's an emergency. You have to do what I tell you to do. Okay. Fire. There's a fire in the theater. Okay. Well, some people might know where the fire extinguisher is and come running into the theater to go grab the fire extinguisher to put out the fire. right? But if somebody is in command of the emergency response and says, everybody must leave the theater, okay? You could argue that he's causing the fire to be worse by micromanaging everybody's actions. Imagine the fire people, you know, firemen and women coming in to put out the, oh, no, everybody out, got to leave, you know. I have decided what is best for the theater, okay? They want to have absolute, complete, and total control over the response rather than, you know, what is right for your health? What is your decision about your body? And so Article 18 talks about all of the recommendations that a director general or a regional director might make. And, you know, it includes recommendations like lockdowns and quarantines and forced vaccinations and prevention, you know, therapies and all that sort of stuff. They redefined, or they are defining, response products, you know, health products. And it's all pharmaceutical products. There's no take some herbs or nutrition or vitamins or, you know, early treatment of any kind. Mm-hmm. And at some point you realize that what they're talking about is maybe not even as important as what they're not talking about. There's no doctors talking about, oh, if we had only done this, right? You know, all of the names that you can name of the doctors who have saved lives by not following the dictate of the protocols of the organizations and the hospitals and all that stuff. There's no discussion about any of the things that you and I both know are the things that you and I would want to do if we had a problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so they actually had a meeting in September. On September 21st, they had a informal focused consultation, and they had a bunch of experts, because that's what this is all about. It's all about technocratic control. Oh, the smart people get to tell everybody else what to do, even when they're wrong. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the problem that we're dealing with. And so they asked their experts, well, we want to have these core capacities that the nations are prepared for the next problem. And you notice I didn't say the word pandemic. Please remind me to come back to that. Mm-hmm. The next issue that we have, we got to be prepared. And so what metrics could we enforce that would ensure that nations were prepared for, you know, potential problems? And the experts really, I was surprised. I really was. I said, we don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the measurements that we had prior to 2020 were wrong. The nations that have all kinds of money and big healthcare facilities, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Germany, United Kingdom, the United States, you would have thought that they would have nipped it right in the bud, that they would have been great. Okay. Great communications, great, you know, hospitals, great doctors and technology. And the metrics would have said that the poor nations would have suffered because they were, you know, poor and they weren't prepared. But that isn't really what the data shows. And they literally said that they owe it to themselves to analyze, you know, how the hell you measure that. How do you measure being prepared against something that you don't know what it is that's coming? Mm-hmm. Right. And that flies in the face of one of the principles that they have in their treaty, which says, well, no guidance should be given unless it's backed by scientific study. Mm-hmm. And so I can simplify the whole thing. The document that they call the conceptual zero draft of their treaty is 32 pages long. The draft of the proposed amendments is 46 pages long. Just scroll down to the bottom and let me know if you see any footnotes to any double-blind placebo-controlled studies showing that their recommendations and their proposals have scientific backing. There's not, and there never will be, mm-hmm. a single one. They're just people who want to be in control. They think they're smarter than everybody else. So that gives them the right to tell everybody what to do, even if they're literally dead wrong.
Next, let us take a look at a clip from the Union of the Unwanted show with Mike, Charlie Robinson, Sam Tripoli, Steve Poikinen, and Lindsay Sharman discussing the SPARES pandemic simulation.
For sure.
I will say this about the information being fed over to the people who just do not get the information when it comes to like the vaccines. So in my personal life, I would say the majority of the people that I know are vaccinated. I recently talked to a good friend of mine who was initially super pro-vaccine, married to a person in the medical field, and was obviously being fed information like, you got to get vaccinated, you got to get vaccinated. Well, he called me up and we talked, and he says, I don't want to sound anti-vaccine, but I don't think I'm going to get any more. Because he had to preface that. And he's like, he knows what kind of show I do. He listens every now and again. And it's like, I don't think you're anti-vaccine. I think you're just being reasonable. You're a healthy guy. You're in your 40s. You probably don't need a flu shot, do you? You probably don't need these. And he felt reassured that I'm not going to think he's crazy, but I think there's more people out there that are just not going to get more COVID-19 vaccines. They're just not going to tell anybody about it. They're just going to quietly dip out, not reference the past as much, and just try to move on, forgive and forget is what I think their philosophy is.
He needed your support and you gave it to him. That's actually really beautiful. I hope more of us can be that for people if they haven't completely cut us out. But it's hard because, you know, people who are on whatever side in their little bubbles, and I hope that we all can get out of our bubbles more too, and just at least know what people are thinking and feeling outside of it. But you can bring them information and they'll just reject it, right? So when someone was asking me early on, like why I wasn't going to get this vaccine, and I was like, well, I don't get any vaccines. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why, and I'm happy to share them with you. And, you know, they kind of asked me some questions. We had some conversation, and by the end, they were just the same thing that we always see. They're like frustrated and angry, and they just want to call you names and tell you to shut up and go away. And I was like, you know, if you want, I'll put together like a document of all these things, and you can go through it at your own pace, and you can just look and see what you think about it, because that's probably the best way to decide anything in the world is to see what you think about the data and the information. And they're like, yeah, you know, I guess if you send it to me, and I have it still, and it's just a vaccine document. It's all sources that are .gov. It's from court cases. It's all from peer-reviewed journal articles. 100% of it. None of it is just opinion pieces or news pieces or anything. It's all like primary documents and all of this, the best shit you can get. And I send that to them. Nothing. I ask a little later, like, did you look at any of that? Like, no, I'm not going to. I'm just going to get the vaccine. I'm like, well,
Can you send me that?
Yeah, I'll be happy to share it with anybody. It's an awesome just list of documents. But that's the kind of thing too. And so a similar group of people, we one day made the rule that we can no longer talk politics. And what they mean is you can't talk about anything that is social even, right? You can't talk about anything really of importance. And I'm like, I think that's insane. I think it's insane to take any topic off the table, but I'm willing to respect your boundaries. And when I'm around you, I won't bring up politics. But those same people will actually bring up stuff as long as it's like, right? They might be like, did you see that Jimmy Fallon XBB dance? And wasn't it great or something? And you're like, well, isn't that politics now? Like, so you can bring it up and you can put your stuff out. Yeah, but I can't.
They talk about no outside issues. And I've discovered that really means anything from conservative side, because they'll bring up liberal, and I'm an old school liberal, but they'll bring up progressive outside issues and nobody pushes back on it. But the minute you go the other side, there's an issue, and it just sucks, man. It just really sucks. I know people that are like anti-COVID you know, COVID vaccine, but they're totally open-minded to all the other vaccines because they've been around for longer. They've worked it out more. And you're just like, well, they still can't be held accountable for if something goes wrong with them. You can't sue them. That should make you so nervous. But I don't know, man. It's just crazy out there. And it's just like the mental gymnastics that must be done. It's just dangerous. Like, there are people out there that are dangerously stupid. Dangerously stupid.
It's getting worse every day.
And You know why? I posted a meme that somebody sent me, which was like, it's not getting crazier. It's just getting more obvious. And that's really what's going on. They're having reactions. And I bet you a lot of these people that are just furious with the notion that the vaccine could have caused the Buffalo Bills player to have a heart attack, got the vaccine, are just so scared that they're next.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they don't know. I don't know how you don't run down to some cardiologist and get your heart looked at.
Yeah. Well, did you see this?
That's part of it.
Did you see that research that's coming out now where they're showing evidence of your brain's internally destroying itself, basically, and becoming sponge-like? And they actually can see the... I'm going to like not remember the correct words, but dendrites maybe or something are like gathering this dead tissue around it, basically. And they can show that it isn't virus related, and they can show that it is mRNA related. And so it's crossing the blood-brain.
Prions in the brain? Is that what you're...
It's not prions. Like
no.
It's similar though, right? Because those also cross the blood-brain barrier.
Spike on your brain tissue is what it is. Amy Kelly, who leads the research team for Naomi Wolf, she's been on the show a handful of times, and this is like what she's specifically in charge is collating all of the data that the other 3,500 researchers come through, and she's in charge of all of them, and then she comes or goes around and explains it. And every barrier in your body, blood, brain, blood, anything, any blood barrier in your body, the way that she basically described it is like, the way that my head interpreted it is, remember the center of the earth drilling device in the James Bond movie? That's what the spike proteins are doing to every blood barrier in your body, is they're just boring right through it. And yeah, then
it's just opening. Yep.
Yeah. And then gathering anywhere, whether it's your reproductive organs or your brain, everything in between. That's what they're doing.
So when we're noticing that people honestly seem stupider, and they're also connecting this to like, if we've seen people who we know who seem to have changed a lot, they're like, well, yeah, brain damage causes random changes in your personality. So we've all been talking about this for, again, a few years, right? And we're like, I don't know, it seems like people changed. Like, it seems like they can't handle certain things, or their personality is actually affected by this, and your memory is, and your ability to use your cognitive, higher sort of reasoning. All of that is impacted by this, and we can show it physically now. We have the physical evidence of it. But it's, again, you can show it to whoever, and they don't want to admit that they killed themselves.
So, yeah, Charlie, I interrupt you. So in the SPARS scenario, the study put out, I forget, who was this? John Hopkins did this?
Yes.
I got it up on the screen. It looks like we're on chapter 9 of this.
Okay, so it goes from 2025 to 2028 in their fictional scenario, right? So you take that. And you just, that time frame, and you just move it down a couple years and drop it right on 2020, right? And then you just use that as the benchmark. And we're right at that
part. So what's going on?
We're right at the part where the vaccines had been rolled out. The first wave of slight deaths start to happen, and changes to people, but it's kind of subtle. And nobody's really sure one way or the other. And now we're in the phase where it becomes undeniable, where everyone gets sponge brain, because it was in this fictional scenario, it's built on a bovine vaccine base in order to jumpstart the production of the vaccine. They want to get it out to market as soon as possible. They use an emergency use authorization. They use the media. They use rappers. They use they do the same thing that we got. You take a look at, you read that 80-page SPARS document and just put 2020 in there in place of 2025, and it sounds like you're reading a news report from what you just went through. And the shitty part is that we're about to get to the part in the document where it becomes just completely and utterly undeniable what's happening. And then the general public turns on the government. in a way that's that they don't do normally. And it gets very chaotic. And so this document is to prep the media and the pharmaceutical industries for how they're going to react when this happens, because it's got to be a joint effort between the two of them. So that's the mission of this SPARS pandemic document.
And what is their reaction? You have reaction, Sam, reacting to you what you're saying.
What's that?
What do they do? What do the government and the pharmaceutical companies do together?
They say you can't sue us because we have this law that says you can't sue us. But what we'll do is we'll create this new organization, and we'll fill that new organization with a bunch of money, and we'll let you sue it. And then you and then the people sue that, and they drain it of all the money, and the government says, we'll put more money in. And then the head of the FDA, the head of the CDC, the head of the Fauci character, and all of the media influencers that were a part of this are all basically banished from society. And then the simulation ends there. So you don't know really what happens to them.
What?
That's how it ends. And I'm telling you right now, it's not identical. It's not identical, but there are so many similarities down to the fake Twitter hashtag that they used, hashtag vaccine saves, used it in SPARS, used it in real life. The rap group, you know, the fictional rapper BZ, what'd we get? Run DMC, what'd we get? Juvenile, back that vax up.
Mm-hmm.
Same fucking thing, man. I mean, they're following a playbook, unfortunately.
I'll fight everybody, bro.
Bucks. I don't want it to be true. I want it to be fictional.
Yeah.
But like, and I'm not saying that it is going to happen the way I'm just saying that, like, based on where we are in this story, it's like, it's pretty it's disturbingly accurate. I'll just put it like that.
It goes beyond like the health. And then it's like, well, you have family members you have to take care of. They no longer can work. And then you have those jobs not being fulfilled. So the economy gets smaller and smaller. And we live basically in a depression where the people that aren't vaxxed, they're obligated to help family members who were. And so there are less resources being consumed. So either way, it looks like Bill Gates is winning in the World Economic Forum, because there's going to be less people working, less people traveling to work and consuming resources, so they get one version of their goal accomplished.
Thanks for tuning in to the Independent Review. I will leave you with one last clip exposing an issue we have with the corporate media, even at your local level, as they are all owned by the same corporations and give the illusion that these broadcasts are only local to you. Tune in next week for another weekly recap.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about troubling, irresponsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.